Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter podcast. I'm joined by Mike. How you doing, my friend?
I am well. How you doing, Thomas?
I'm good. For everyone listening, really funny story. Me and Mike spoke about a year ago. I've had this with you, but we spoke about a year ago.
A year.
We were like, we'll do it next week. And before it's October 2024, and here we are. But it's nice to finally lock you down. It's probably my fault it took so long, or it might have been yours, or it might have been both. We're probably both as bad as each other, Mike. What do you reckon?
Call it global events. Okay, yeah. Global events got in the way, sure.
But the best story for everyone listening is because I left it that long when a member of my team reached out and tried to pin Mike down for a date. Mike replied with, "Who are you? What are you on about?" So I thought we were trying to sell you something.
What are you talking about? What's this going to cost me? Yeah.
Cool. But it's really nice to have you on. And we're going to talk about a lot about career progression. And are you doing? You've got like a really cool mission and vision for what you're doing and helping people break in, and like career progression is what a lot of this podcast is about. And I know it's something that's close to your heart and you're doing a lot to help people. So I'm really looking forward to diving in, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about your band as well, mate.
Album just dropped.
Yeah, we could do a bit of promo for one of the bands you're in or all of them. But I'll start just by doing a, I know some of the listeners will know who you are, some won't. I'm going to do an intro. So started off back in the day for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory as a ocean.
Actually, propulsion.
Propulsion. Sorry. I was just about to say, feel free to shout at me if I get anything.
Chemtrail? Right. What is this? Yeah.
But yeah, back in the day, as an ocean scientist, you were then, even in the kind of mid to late 90s, you had that entrepreneurial flair and spirit. You were the founder and chief exec of Network Commerce Incorporated. You then went on to be an information security practice lead at Ritchie Systems. You were also a principal consultant. You then progressed to management consultant for Global Security Consulting. You were also a CISO for the city of Seattle for almost 8 years, which is great. You're then a partner for MK Hamilton and Associates, founder and president, which is a position that you still hold to date, for Critical Informatics Inc. And you were also the founder, president, CISO of Critical Insights for almost a decade. And that is your business now. So, Mike, you sound like a busy man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Thomas. I am busy. And in fact, I'm wearing too many hats. Something's got to dial down here pretty soon. I think one of the things we may touch on today is burnout. And look at me, I'm 24 years old. You see what this business does to you.
No, it's real. What's your thoughts on burnout, Mike? And this might be the wrong attitude, because I talk about balance on the podcast and I'm horrendous at it, and I'm probably a bit like you. I'm quite obsessive and I'm go. My mindset is, if I'm enjoying it, I just go. The minute I have to force it, I actually do stop. And look, that could happen on a Tuesday. It could happen on a Sunday. But if it does, I do just stop. Am I doing the right thing, or is that a good way? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's historically, I've gone in 10-year increments of things that I've done. When you talk about working at JPL, the Jet Propulsion Lab, I was doing satellite oceanography for NASA. And so all those diplomas back there are in earth science. And I did geochemistry and oceanography, and I've been to the bottom of the ocean in the Alvin submarine and driven around the mud in an 8-foot titanium sphere. And yeah, after a while, it's got to be, I don't want to say boring, but it wasn't what it was when I first started. And so I changed channels and decided I was going to hand roll firewalls in Solomon, Southern California. And I think I'm coming up to another one of those kind of break points pretty soon here. Talked about the nonprofit that I started, Pisces, a little bit before we started. So Pisces, Public Infrastructure Security Cyber Education System. That's no cost cyber monitoring for small cities and counties in return for collecting data from those networks and using it as live fire curriculum for currently, I think, 15 universities. So teaching people to be cyber analysts by being cyber analysts with critical infrastructure. So that differentiates them in the job hunt and provides some infrastructure protection to some things that I really think are critical. I think my flushing toilet is much more important than a credit card and free crediting. So, you know, we're talking about 911, elections, water purification, all those things tends to drive me a lot more than the company. So at some point, company's going to go do its thing. I'm much more motivated to mint new practitioners and put butts in seats. This cyber analyst, 10th fastest growing job in the United States, only cyber job on that list. These are the people we need. So I want to make those people.
Yeah, definitely. I love that, Mike, because you've always got this thing where most employers won't take anyone with any experience, but how do you get experience? You can get all the certifications in the world. If you've got no commercial or hands-on experience, it's difficult anyway, but without it, it becomes really difficult. So I really like what you're doing there. When it comes to Pisces, like for people listening that are trying to break in that could really benefit from that, that are genuinely passionate about cyber, like how do I get involved if I'm a guy or girl listening that really wants to?
You go to the Pisces website, pisces-intlinternational.org, and you can read about it there. And if you are in proximity, so a couple of things. If you're in proximity to one of Pisces schools now, and you can take the Pisces classes as part of a four-year degree. But I don't know if you saw the recent initiative from the federal government where they're really leaning into community colleges. And this is something that we've been saying for a long time. This four-year cyber degree program where you learn this much about this many things and you're not really qualified to do any of them, right? You need to get that experience. This is going to treat, especially cyber analysts, more like trade school. And so it's 2 years. You're going to go head down. You're going to learn about being an analyst by being an analyst, and then go out and start your career that way. And then there's, depending on where you go to work, there's all these pathways that you can take to, I want to become a red teamer, a penetration tester, or I'm more interested in engineering operations and keeping the equipment alive. And there's a lot of roles in one of these companies. The perfect entry point is this analyst part, because this gives you the context for all of the other things. So again, leaning into trade school, the federal government says we're going to do scholarship for service in community colleges, which means they will pay for 2 years of community college in return for 2 years of service to the federal government. That can be critical mass right there. That if this is done right, we can generate enough of these practitioners so that, number one, we don't have this big job shortage. Number two, they're all cheaper because we're going to flood the bench. But number three, more important, we have plenty of eyes on, because humans can investigate things today better than machines. That may not always be true, but that is true today.
Yeah, no, I love that, by the way. And I love that thing about the entry point coming through the analyst. And I think it's really important that the listeners hear that for any that are trying to break in, because you get a lot, you mentioned pen testers and red teamers, you get so many people that fixate on, I want to be a hacker, I want to do that. And the reality of trying to land certain roles, not just pen testers, other roles, that some are really hard to land. And I think coming in and getting that commercial experience in any, we're talking about analysts being a great entry point, but if you can get that experience and don't focus too much on the end goal, focus on actually getting in and breaking in, because it gets easier if you don't try and jump straight to the end.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the way we treat it here at Critical Insight. We hire through Pisces about probably 50% of our SOC operation and Pisces students. And then as soon as they come in, here are your performance gates. You have 6 weeks to hit them and you will immediately be promoted. And if you do it in a week, you get promoted in a week. And then you start looking at either going up through the ranks of the analysts all the way to SOC supervisor, etc. Or you can start looking at these other things the company does. You may want to be a GRC consultant, and you have great communication skills and can sit down with customers and take them through a standard of practice and find where their gaps are, things like that. So people have migrated to all of those positions in this company, and we're really proud of that.
Oh, mate, I love this. This is good. And I love the fact that they've got a clearly articulated roadmap in terms of progression, because I think ultimately that's what we all want. I think when we're all a bit younger, we go through a phase of thinking it's money, then we get a bit and realize that's completely overrated. And ultimately, it's about that feeling of moving forward and being and ultimately progression. If you've got that, I think you're happy.
Yeah, and that was encapsulated in a book. Our CEO said, hey, let's read this book. This is really good stuff. And I can't remember the name of the book, but it's by Neil Doshi. And he talks about play, potential, and let's see, what is it? Purpose. Play. Your job needs to be fun. You need to be comfortable with the people you're working with, have good relationships. Okay, there's that. Purpose, some kind of mission, right? Mm-hmm. And when we say we work for critical infrastructure, what we mean here is we work for those sectors that, if disrupted, affect us at the scale of our lives. So it's a lot of local government. It's a lot of healthcare, right? And the things that are getting knocked over, all of a sudden you got to drive 500 miles to go get a treatment. You might die on the way. This is really critical stuff. So there's that mission focus, right? Right, that purpose. And then potential. Where do I go with this? Am I getting paid enough? Okay, that part's pretty easy. But where do I go from here? Is this forming my career? Am I going to be stuck in this role? Those are the things that we very deliberately address.
I just didn't catch that last bit. What did you say? Sorry.
Play, purpose, and potential.
Yeah, no, great. And it's by Neil Doshi. We'll get it in the show notes for the listeners. No, thanks, mate. It's so relevant at the minute. Obviously, people, certain aspects of critical infrastructure getting affected right now in the US, and people with that pack. Obviously, it's like quite kind of relevant for the time being. It's good. Mike, you would have seen more than most, I think you'll be really well qualified to answer this next question. You'd have seen a lot of people breaking in. You facilitated that along with the help of your team, and you're seeing a lot of career growth and career progression. Where do you see certain people coming in to your infrastructure and your business and doing really well? And where do you see other people perhaps not doing so well? Is there anything we can all pick up on in terms of running at an optimal rate in terms of growing in security?
Yes. And so this is reflected in, again, the federal government of the United States has said, okay, look, we're going to drop the requirement for a 4-year degree. Okay. All right. Which makes a lot of sense. I talk to students all the time and I say this, yes, you can get your new degree in cybersecurity, but if you get your pedigree the way I got mine, you are going to go to prison. And I really believe that the experimentation, the walking right up to the gray line, taking risk, having a home network that you can do things on, your experiments, your engineering projects, things like that, that really counts for a lot. And so when we interview, we are concerned, yes, what did you do in school? Do you have any certifications? Do you have any experience? Did you go through the Pisces class? Do you have that operational experience? But more importantly, let's talk about your curiosity and your willingness to take that risk. Have you ever scanned Morgan Stanley's perimeter? They're not going to care. It happens a million times a day. But that provides you with context. What are bad guys doing? And these are questions in our interview process. And so when we have folks coming in and all they have is that degree, they are not differentiated from somebody who spent a whole bunch of nights staying up all night messing around with stuff. That really counts for a lot. And so we are not stuck in this, you got to have a degree, you got to have a certification, you got to have experience. All that needs to fall away. And we need to really evaluate people based on their skills. And as I say, their curiosity and their willingness to take risk.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I hear the word curiosity a lot across the cyberspace here, a lot across within the hacking world as well. And it's clearly a characteristic that needs to be there and needs to be valued. I think as well, I've got a theory, and I was talking about this at another pod before, but I'll mention it again. I've got a theory that, like, with AI and automation coming in, I think this kind of, like, not just having the degree is great, but having the certifications is great. But I think this kind of, you're an energized guy, I can feel the energy coming through the screen, and like this thing of being on it and wanting to move forward and progress, and let's say curious, scanning this, what you're doing, staying up. I'm not saying we talked about burnout, I'm not saying you should stay up every night. Now, to sleep one night and just going crazy, I think
you're in your 20s, it's different though.
It's almost like you can't say that these days, but I think you need it. I think you need that, like, uncontrollable desire and passion. Yes. I think it's needed in security because I think those types of people will prevail no matter what AI does. But I think the people that want to sit behind a scanner and chill, without sounding horrible, this game's probably not for you.
Somebody comes in and says, so on my home network, I'm concerned that my internet service provider doesn't patch my cable modem. So I went down to Goodwill and I bought a $5 Cisco access point, and I flashed it with the DDWRT firmware, built a firewall out of it, turned off the Wi-Fi on my cable modem, used the Wi-Fi off the router, turned off the admin interface facing the internet on the cable modem. Now I'm protected from my ISP. Somebody comes in and says that counts a whole lot more than I have a 4.0 grade average.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And by the way, for everyone listening, if you were Mike and you say that word for word, he'll know you've listened to the show. So don't copy.
There are some people that have come and they've said, this is what I did. You're in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just having that kind of burning desire. And sometimes it is uncontrolled. When you are genuinely passionate about something, it just takes you away and it's good. And let's say sometimes you're not meant to say that anymore. But for God's sake, we've got to we've got to do stuff to move forward in this game. But okay, Mike, so cool. So the guys that are coming in, so they're coming in, they're doing work, so they're jumping from Pisces into your main business, and they're becoming full. I was looking down at the team earlier. I could see some like tier two guys in there, and maybe some tier three as well. I could see some fully fledged kind of analysts. So people are like progressing and really at this is really working, is what I'm trying to say.
Our chief delivery officer that runs both the consulting operation and the managed SOC operation started as an analyst. Went and got his MBA. And in fact, here's one thing I'm really proud of. Right now, we have three or four of our employees, three of which started as analysts, now going to graduate school to get their master's degrees. I am proud of that.
Yeah, no, mate. It's great.
And when they get it, they're going to leave. And I'm still proud of it.
Yeah, it's good. Do you know what I was going to say? You mentioned going to leave. I was actually saying, I bet it creates a lot of loyalty, doesn't it?
I think so. I think the mission focus also creates, I wouldn't say it's loyalty. I would say it is leaning into the mission. We reinforce this all the time. Look, we are trying to keep safe the things that keep you alive. Everybody gets that. Everybody gets it. The Pisces students, ideally, when they are monitoring events going on in the local governments, they're in their own neighborhood, right? At least in their own state. So they get it, right? This is my flushing toilet. This is my drinking water. This is communications for law enforcement, so I'm not dead by the time the cops get here. All that stuff is really important. It's not hard to convince people what you are doing is very important. So loyalty, not so much. Alignment with the mission, I think, more.
Okay, cool. No, I like that. And yeah, so this is as real as it gets before they get into it, because you're actually monitoring real environments. I'm presuming this, the logistics of how that works. Are you pairing, so new people come in, do they go in a small team and get paired with really experienced people? Or do you have got, how does that go down, mate?
For, you mean the scholastic part or after they're hired?
Yeah, no. So when they come in, they're brand new, they've been given the opportunity, they make it that they're genuinely ticking all the boxes in terms of meeting the criteria. When they come in, they're rubbing shoulders with more experienced people?
That's a great question. So it's yes and no, because COVID flatlined everything. And we had two physical SOCs that we couldn't populate anymore. And we had a business continuity plan that said, if the SOC is uninhabitable, here's the plan. Everybody goes home and works. Here's what you have to have in terms of security of your workspace. You have to have a managed device. You must use multi-factor authentication, blah, 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 blah. And so COVID happened. We activated that. And then it was like, we don't really need to be paying for these facilities anymore. So when they come in, yes, they become part of a community. It's mostly online. So when the analysts work their shift, they have a camera on all the time, and they're always interacting with their other folks on shift. I'll say this too. When we talk about play, purpose, potential, the play part, you got to feel like you're having a good time, not getting burned out. So our analysts work 3 on, 4 off. They work 3 12-hour shifts a week, and then they take 4 days off because we don't want to burn them up. And I hate to say it, but part of the job description in this business is you're going to lose all the time. You're going to see things going on that you can't get in front of, and you're trying your best to get in front of them. Sometimes that doesn't work. And it's really important to understand contextually, this is just the way it works. Our business here is to minimize impact of a foreseeable event. You're going to get cybered, all right? If cybercrime was the third largest economy in 2022, you're not going to go glove to glove with those folks, right? They're highly motivated, highly compensated, very skilled. And if they target you, they're going to win. We need to admit this. It's going to get happen. And our job is to put out the grease fire on the stove before the house is engulfed in flames. This is the kind of attitude we have, trying to A, not let get people burned out, or B, get depressed about the nature of the job.
I really like the bit. So bringing a lot of young, talented, motivated people in a remote environment. This is what we're taking on some inexperienced people from all around the world, and we're teaching them recruitment, and we're checking in, like we're doing a stand-up at the start of the day, I'm doing a stand-up at the end of the day, but the camera on all the time. That's really interesting. I'm asking in a bit of a selfish way for myself, and I'm asking to help other people listening as well. But so the camera's on, and they're just, it's interactive throughout the shift. Is that it?
Yes. Tickets go to a queue. Analysts work out of the queue. They cooperatively work on some things. When something is escalated to the next tier, another analyst will jump on. They're working cooperatively on that. This is, I think, a good way that we have structured this. And I will say, human eyes are very important. Human investigators are very important. The addition of the automation to help them with their jobs, help it move it along so that it's they're not getting just crushed by tickets, up to and including we have a first tier AI analyst now. So rather than a ticket coming into an analyst and they're going to do the initial investigation and they're going to find out the reputation of IP addresses and the provenance of domain names and whether or not these TPs have been reported as an active campaign, et cetera, and then handing it off to another tier of analysts if it looks like this thing needs to progress. Rather, it comes in and the AI analyst goes boom and does that first tier investigation and then passes the ticket off. We've sped up mean time to detection and tried to minimize the time of that investigation because time is important.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a really open mind when it comes to AI. It sounds a bit cliche to us, but I want to ask you the AI question. It sounds like you're implementing it really nicely. It also sounds like you're not one of these people that's going full hog and going, you're valuing the human interaction and probably saving the more sophisticated, intelligent, stimulating parts for humans and then bringing AI in where it can do stuff better than humans, but not in other cases. What's your mindset with all that? How have you found it implementing it? Yeah, where do you think it's all? Some people are scared of it, but I think that's the wrong attitude. Yeah, where's your head at with it all?
I wouldn't. So scared, I understand. I would characterize myself more as cynical. So I've been to the RSA conference a lot of times. And I don't know if you're familiar with the RSA game.
Yeah.
Where you have something in your beverage holder and you pick the Gartner buzzword of the year and walk through the RSA vendor floor. And every time you see that buzzword, you take a drink. And generally, you're not going to make it out alive. So XDR, UEBA, now it's AI, AI everywhere, right? It's TBD with me because I've seen a lot of things that were the biggest thing ever, and then they become a footnote in what is included in products and just part of the normal battle rhythm of things. And it's not a big special thing anymore. Mm. I think implementing AI correctly as part of the investigation process, part of the blue team toolbox, largely to combat what the bad guys are doing with AI, right? They're coming out with adaptive malware that just knows how to propagate through your organization and turn off detections and embed itself in running processes and things like this. That stuff's getting sneakier and sneakier and sneakier. Mm-hmm. So the implementation of AI to combat AI, I would say I'm still on the fence, but it looks like it has a lot of potential. Some of the other things that they're saying, this is, you should have an AI assistant with you at all times on your phone as part of your presence. No, man. No. And frankly, and this is just personal, the way that AI is going to be implemented or is being implemented by ad companies, right? The advertising industry, right? That all got away from us with all the creepy tracking, and we never got in front of that with legislation that would limit that. And now we're trying to correct for that. But they're still ahead of us, right? We're capitalists, right? 75% of the GDP in the United States is based on consumption by just people. Okay. So ad agencies are constantly pummeling us with this. And more, it's this surveillance advertising that we got to get away from, okay? And when it's AI that figures out how to price something dynamically for you because they know you're in need of something right now, yeah, that's, I don't like that. And I think that's where we're going.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you use Uber, Mike, but I've had it where I can be in central London at a busy time and I flick an Uber and it actually says inflated price. It's going that way already. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And on the AI front, like we call it tech wreck. Like I get hit up by salespeople all the time trying to sell me a tool to help me recruit better. And they all say whatever their name is and then AI on the end. And everyone's just putting it on the end of everything. Yeah.
Take a drink.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. It really is going that way. And yeah, so I think it's like there's things that hit today and gone tomorrow. I do think it's here to stay though, mate, don't you? My mentality is, and I've said this before, but I really think we'd be crazy to, you use the word cynical, we'd be crazy not to be cynical. If we went full hog, that would be crazy, but it'd be crazy to ignore it as well. It's about taking an intelligent approach.
It is. I mean, you can see there's lots of open source news articles about failures in AI. And let's see, it was the one on Twitter, X, called Grok, was giving people advice about voting, saying voting is over in 9 states. No, it's not. It was completely patently wrong. what you have to trust is not so much the technology, the AI, but how it is trained and what's the intent of the trainer. Because you can train something to give you completely wrong information by feeding it completely wrong information. Yes. And in the disinformation world that we live in right now, that's all too possible. So who are you going to trust?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's definitely not. I've asked it some questions before to do with recruiting and stuff like that. And some of the answers that have come back, I listen to a lot of recruitment podcasts just because that's what I'm into. And there was one guy, he'd asked it about margins on a contractor. And long story short, if you'd have followed the advice, you'd have lost money for doing your job. It was ridiculous. So yeah,
it's
early stage. You've definitely got to think. I've seen it with people going over the top on, I've had it in application processes. I actually had the first time, and I don't know if I should mention this, but I'll say it anyway. But I had a candidate and he absolutely went overboard, used loads of it on a technical assessment in the application process. And the employer, I've known him for a while, and I got the call to say, Tom, look, not saying it's your fault, but this is what's happened. We've ran some tools this side and we can see that this chap has used AI where he shouldn't have done. So it's just a balanced approach and just making sure it's just thinking and actually just being, normal is the right word, but
yeah, generative AI, I think, has potential in helping people do tasks that are repetitive. What's an example? We have a consulting operation. They got to write a lot of reports. And if you train AI with a bunch of reports that they've written, and then later you can feed it some data and have it accelerate that report in your own writing style, we're experimenting with that, and that's got some potential. I wouldn't say it's there yet, because the whole training bit, it's not that straightforward. We have engineers working on this kind of thing. That's not really for me. This is my job, is this.
I want to talk to you about that a bit, because when you said something about 10 minutes ago and you were like, yeah, we had a plan in place for if the SOC was inhabitable, we would do this, we would do that. And I was thinking, this guy's organized. I'm trying to grow the business over here. And I like to use the word like beautiful, organized chaos. Like we're doing the recruitment, we're doing it well. But like in terms of growing, there's a lot of structure that I need to get in place, which I'm not even sure I've got the capabilities to do. But yeah. I'd like you to talk a bit more about that. Like, how do you structure things and organize things as you grow in? I do have leaders listening. I do have my clients listening, which are business owners. So I know you've gone through various life cycles with different businesses you've had in the past. I know we've talked about private equity and stuff like that before when we were on the phone about a year ago. So I know you've really been there when it comes to doing business and building businesses. So have you got any tips there, certainly for me and for other people listening that are trying to grow a business and get things rocking?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in today's world, everyone has to see everyone else's security papers before you do business, right? Everybody's doing third-party risk management, all these things. So some attention to not only the standard of practice that you are adhering to in your company, your ability to demonstrate your controls, but the policies that are behind that, and especially the ones about business continuity and disaster recoverability. Those turn out to be really important. So federal government here talks a lot about resilience, right? And so what is that? Resilience means you can take a punch and get back up off the mat before the 10 count. And again, the punch is coming, right? Foreseeable event. And so leaning into some of those business continuity resilience controls and then being able to demonstrate that to your business associates becomes a competitive differentiator. Everybody is worried about what kind of threat their business associates are to their own business. And so the more that you can assuage those fears, the better business is going to be for you. Not only that, but when something really goes down, you have a plan to keep operating, whereas your competitors may not. And we're starting to see this more and more. You've seen this in the healthcare sector in the United States, these gigantic outages where so many businesses relied on what constitutes now an obvious single point of failure. And so all those hospitals couldn't operate, clinics, physicians couldn't operate. You don't want to be that business that's responsible for something like that. So your ability to demonstrate that, plus leaning in to, if we get hit, we got a plan, and being able to show that plan. That's, I think, probably the best advice I could give along those lines. And when it comes to taking investment, That was a whole different conversation. That's, and again, cynical.
Yeah. I was gonna say, you seem like you're in a good mood, Matt, and I don't want to piss you off. So we'll leave it there, shall we?
Okay.
When you're doing that, I'm presuming you've a lot of frameworks that you're following and stuff like that, and just tailoring them for your organization. Is that how it's all structured?
That becomes worms there, because the regulatory situation in the United States is active and bubbly, I'll say. And so I used to be the vice chair of the state, local, tribal, and territorial Government Coordinating Council for DHS. And it was all about infrastructure protection. And in that ecosystem, there are sector-specific regulatory agencies. The EPA regulates the water sector, Health and Human Services regulates healthcare, right? And after the Colonial Pipeline episode back a few years ago, where 45% of the fuel supply on the East Coast was disrupted, the Biden administration said, hey, all you sector-specific agencies are supposed to be guiding your sector so that things like this don't happen. Who is the sector-specific agency for pipelines? It turns out it's the TSA. And so now there's been this bounce back where all of the sector-specific agencies now are providing all of this guidance to their sectors. And EPA said, we want you to do a cyber risk assessment, three states soon, and everybody's backed off of this. So there's a little uncertainty in the regulatory stuff right now. That said, any business can lean into the NIST cybersecurity framework because it is outcome-based, right? It's not prescriptive. It doesn't say have this control in place. It says make this thing happen. And so anybody can use this. And so doing your risk assessment with the NIST cybersecurity framework and making sure that it's not just alignment with a framework, you're finding risk, right? Because this control is not in place. What's the likelihood that we could get unauthorized disclosure of protected records, theft, extortion, disruption, or being used as a third party to attack others, right? Five business outcomes there. Mm-hmm. And so we align with that. However, because of all the sector-specific things, notably the DoD and something called the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, if you want to do any business with a business that does business with the DoD and soon federal agencies, you have to comply at the same level your customer does if you're a service provider to them. Yeah. So this is a bit of a heavy lift. And if you're in a sector that is regulated by one of these agencies, you need to pay attention to this because they're about to start enforcing and they are using terms like negligence. I keep using this term foreseeability. That's actually a legal term. The standard of foreseeability, and I'll paraphrase, is that if you fail to take steps to mitigate a foreseeable risk, you're guilty of negligence. And the negligence word is starting to pop up all over the place, and this is getting people's attention. What do we comply with? The NIST cybersecurity framework, we're audited every year against SSAE 18, which is the SOC 2, and we are looking at CMMC compliance so that we can differentiate ourselves in the space where we're working with a small company that makes a coating for a bolt that goes on a spy satellite. Mm-hmm. We have to be the same level as them. All that is a lot to put on small business. And again, I'm a little cynical as to how far this is bounced in the regulatory direction, but I don't see any other choice. The other thing the federal government is doing, and this is brilliant, is they're using market forces. And they're saying, hey, we have the biggest wallet on earth. And if you want some of that sweet greenback money, your product is going to have to meet these characteristics. You're going to have the IoT label, seal of approval, that it's secure out of the box. You got a vulnerability management plan, things like that. So they're doing a lot to get us secure, both on the regulatory side, but on the market forces side. And it's coming on all small businesses from both sides. So that's where that is.
Mike, it is. It's that compliance, but you said they're concerned about how far it's bounced in regulatory terms. And it has, because I obviously have visibility on what comes into the agency in terms of roles and projects we're working on. And the compliance space is hot. NIST 853, obviously 800-171, which I know is similar to CMMC and SOC 2, there's a bit of overlap. That demand for those skill sets and people that are really good at those skills is most certainly there at the minute. And CMMC, it's a whole different conversation. I think everyone is starting to realize that, yes, this is actually, even people outside of security are like, oh, hang on, this actually might be real. Maybe I should start taking it seriously.
It's funny. I was managing consultant, right, for VeriSign Security. And one of the things that I did was write white papers. And one of those white papers I wrote was like 2000 and security as a competitive differentiator. And I ended up being right. It took a long time, but I ended up being right. Because now if you can't show your papers, you're not going to do business. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you reckon? January 2025 in contracts, CMMC?
I'm thinking mid-year for us. That means that we got to do the gap assessment. You have to have something called a POAM, right? And you got to close those gaps. And then you have to be certified. And getting certified is not cheap, right? The C3 PAOs that do the certification, you need to be talking to them. So they just finalized the final rule. And you need to be engaging those service providers now if you want to get certified by the deadline time, because they're going to be real popular.
They are. And there's not many of them across. Is there 75 in the US of CP3POs?
That I don't know.
I read a stat somewhere.
The company that does our SOC 2 compliance, Shellman, it turns out that one of the partners there was a guy that worked with me at VeriSign when we all worked at VeriSign together. And in fact, the professional progeny from Guardant and VeriSign litter the landscape. And we've got friends that we can fall back on that are in all of these different pockets. And so my buddy Doug over at Shellman, he's going to handle CMMC compliance for us.
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, let's say it's definitely coming. But it is the only way. You use the thing about the DOD, hitting people in the pocket. You talked about if you want to do business with the DOD, they've got plenty of money. And I think it's the only way to get people to actually listen. It's like PCI DSS pen tests in Q4. Like everyone does them then because they have to. It's some people, they only understand one language.
Yeah. End of the year, find the couch change. We got to get a pen test quick.
Yeah, no, definitely. Cool. So we've talked about burnout a bit. You've got three different bands, yeah, music bands?
So I play in two performing bands. One just dropped an album. The other is about to record an album. And the other is just, I jam with some other people. And we'll play live when we feel like playing live. It's just fun.
Yeah, cool.
Really good way to blow off steam.
No, right? It is. This is what I was about to say, is that I'm imagining when you're performing and stuff like that, the last thing you're probably thinking about is NIST 800, 171, whatever it is, or a SOC. And I actually think it's when some of the best ideas, business ideas, come into your mind, and better ways to do things when your brain is more relaxed. Yeah, so you've got the music studio just down the corridor, yeah?
Yeah, so I rented in February 2020, and we all know what happened then, rented this space because I had so much stuff in my basement, and I'm playing drums in my basement every day, and my wife and daughter are like, dude, are you going to keep, what's going on here? So I came down and I found a basement in an otherwise unoccupied building. There's the original planning department for the city of Bremerton where I am. And so it's got a men's room and a women's room and a long counter and storage areas and stuff like that. And the guy gave me a smoking deal on it. And no one would come down and play. And then after a while, we're in opposite ends of the room wearing masks, and I'm wiping everything down with bleach spray, wiping microphones down. And then bands started to form, and then bands started to come because they want place to play. This is important. And not the fact that I'm a drummer in bands, but I do counsel people. You know, you're in a business that will sear your brain. Mm-hmm. And everybody needs some kind of crazy hat that you can put on for a little while that will turn you into somebody other than who you are in real life. A completely different persona, right? I got punk t-shirts right over here to put on when I go down to practice later, right? I'm going to be somebody different. And I think that is super, super important for keeping your head together. I can't say that I've had great business ideas, because when you're playing drums, especially fast, like one of these bands is really a punk band, it's fast. You got to concentrate on that, right? You're not thinking about anything else. No. So putting yourself in that space, no matter what that is, maybe that's fishing, I don't care, but do that thing.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And I think from just a longevity standpoint, and if you want to be in security for a while, you're right. If there's nothing else at all going on and it's just eat, sleep, repeat, are you going to be in the game in 5-10 years down the line? Maybe not. But also, you want to keep enjoying it, don't you? Like, if you're dipping in and out, and I don't know about you, sometimes I get to Friday night and I'm just like, the week's been so intense and I just need to just step away. But then, like, I take Friday night off and go for a bit of dinner and then take half a Saturday off. Even sometimes by Saturday, I'm like, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to see what's going on. I'm actually, like, hungry again. Yeah. It's so good to step away.
Yeah, that's Sunday for me, because a lot of times Saturday we'll do a live show or something like that. But Sunday, it's like, I got some policy ideas. I come in and get my news blast done. I send out a digest of cyber articles every day for the last 15 years. And I don't know how to stop that. It's part of my life now. I have to do that. Yeah, it's after I punch out for a while. Yeah, then I feel better about going back and getting after it.
I think that's all part and parcel of it, like getting involved with the community. I know on the hiring side, having a lot of clients now, if there's no public speaking going on, if there's no community engagement, it's a massive red flag for a lot of employers. Is that something you've done every day forever?
There's a couple of reasons for it. So I've been doing that since I worked for the city of Seattle. And at first, it was for the people that worked at the city of Seattle, because I wanted them to be aware. Here's what's happening in the world. All right. This is not an abstraction. You need to know the context you get from knowing that Ukraine has activists that are smoking Russian infrastructure. You need to know that stuff is going on, because that stuff can land here. At first, I would do it when I was on my way to work, because the way I get to work over to Seattle, when I worked at Seattle, is you take a ferry, right? You walk onto a ferry. It's an hour ferry. So I'm doing this on the way there. And then all of a sudden now there's thousands of people on the list. They're all over the world. I've been doing it for 15 years. And I will tell you that there are organizations that take it when I send it, right? And it's pretty abbreviated. It's about 20 articles, and it's the title, the money quote, the original link, no creepy tracking, nothing like that.
A
lot of people just post this on an internal page, on an intranet site, for all their employees to have access to it so that everyone has this context. You gotta know, man, they're coming after us, and here are the tactics they're using. So watch out for GitHub, watch out for Dropbox, right? Things like that. People compromising accounts and using that to launch malware campaigns and send a link to everybody in the contact list is happening really frequently. People need to know that. They get a thing from Dropbox, I am automatically suspicious of this.
No, that sounds great, man. And when you think about it, that hacker mindset, the GitHub thing, is it frightening? That is, because that will get a lot of people.
Yeah, so not only the embedding malware in some of the projects in there and then trying to promote those, but GitHub did this thing where they set aside a bunch of IP space for people to use domain names of their own and through GitHub. And there were all these fabricated retail domains and things like that. It just got out of control. It was a really bad decision on their part. Stuff like that is going to happen. When it does, if you know about it, you're less likely to be a victim. And if you're working in something really critical, for example, a hospital, you really need to know that, because a mistake ends up in ransomware for a hospital, patients redirected, potentially loss of life. So it's that important, in my opinion, what's going on in the world, even though at face value, it doesn't look like it applies to you.
Yeah, definitely. And I've said this before, but I want to say it again, because we've all got time to do this. Like, you talked about doing this on your commute on the ferry, whereas years ago, we'd have been doing this together, Mike. I'd have come over to you, you'd have come over to me, whatever it might be. Whereas now, everything's virtual. And sometimes I'm like, I haven't got time to do anything, and I'm working longer hours. I'm in my apartment, my bedroom is literally just up there. And I walk down the stairs, and I just crack on with work. I've cut that commute. The point I'm making is I've got the time. Like, I should be. I do a lot of community stuff, and I'm really active on LinkedIn, obviously the podcast and stuff. But I know you do the pod as well. But we've got the time. Like, in this virtual world, like, everything's so much more efficient. We can automate things, but it's so easy to just convince yourself you haven't got the time to do it. So I think that community vibe and giving back, I think insecurity is so important for loads of different reasons. But we've just got no excuse. Like, I think everyone. I think we're lying to ourselves if we say we haven't got the time to do it. It's probably more creating a good habit and a good routine, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's also a labor of love. You have to believe in what you're doing. And again, believe that it's important, or you're going to figure out something else to do. I can always stop doing this and just spend more free time in the music studio or whatever. But I recognize the importance of this context, getting to people who are not in our business. That's the important part.
Definitely. So, so how did your wife and daughter feel with the drums playing downstairs? They must have been fuming. I'm surprised. I'm surprised you're still married.
I'm going to tell you the truth. It took 7 SUV loads to get all the drums, amps, guitars, mixers, cables out of my basement and moved it all down there. And my wife said, and I quote, "I don't care what it takes. You keep paying for that place."
There you go, mate. You've got a license to have a nice music studio. So it sounds like it's winter, mate.
Yeah, like I say, but now it's a kind of a community thing. There's seven bands that practice down there. It's getting logistically a little different to make sure. Yeah. Sometimes a couple of bands play at the same time, but there's multiple rooms. And like I said, we actually recorded an album down there, not because it's the greatest recording space, because we got a really great sound engineer. And yeah, we got a couple more albums queued up that we're going to do. So I'm having a really good time with this. Yeah, and I don't see stopping this. I can see punching out of commercial world, just working on the nonprofit and hanging around the music studio with other bands. That's what the retirement gig sounds like to me.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound too bad at all. It sounds pretty good. Knowing you, Mike, with the entrepreneurial flair, there'll be some business starting. There'll be some music. There'll be a record label starting soon.
Undisclosed basement recordings.
Yeah. Cool. We talked about you producing content. What content? I used to basically just say, what book's most helpful for your career? But book, podcast, blog, online content, what are you consuming? It could be security, it could be business, it could just be something that's making you the best version of you. Like, what's out there that you're consuming that could help the listeners, mate?
That's a great question. And to me, it is that news blast. It is every day going through articles that are, what's the jaw dropper? What's happened in healthcare? What kind of business impacts have we seen? What is our government doing, especially state and local government? Because I consider that to be extremely critical. What's going on internationally with cyber war? What are the threats and vulnerabilities? What's new in privacy? And then at the very end, there's, meanwhile, here's some dumb thing AI said. Funny or cynical or ironic at the end. And it's the constant ingestion of current events, being very just knowledgeable about what's going on in the world. That helps more than anything else.
It does. I think it helps for building relationships, rapport. I think it helps in business. It helps in media. It helps in loads of different ways. If you're at a conference and you've got nothing to talk about, how are you going to expand and enhance your network? It's good. And the fact that you're actually putting pen to paper or hands to keyboard, it's probably reinforced in your mind, like probably more than most.
Yep. And that's why I can just talk about, hey, federal government's got this new initiative, scholarship for service for 2 years of community college. You work for the federal government for 2 years, more like trade school. I've seen this coming for a long time, but the point is, especially when I'm having conversations with customers, prospects, I can tell them what's going on that applies to you, and they appreciate that information. When we do our experiential marketing, not so much podcasts, but webinars, things like that, we are known for not selling while we do that. Mm. We're here to tell you something, not sell you something. And so it's about class action suits. Why is this happening? Why are we suing ourselves into oblivion? What's going on with insurance? Insurance seems to be bouncing back and now making money in cyber insurance. What are the trends in ransomware and extortion? Because there's fewer victims, but the amounts that they're extorting are larger. It looks like they're going after the whales and specifically after third parties. Now, when we look at third parties that are single points of failure for critical services like healthcare, now it starts to look intentional, like there is collusion with nation states trying to disrupt, destabilize the United States, right? Being able to talk about all that stuff is very helpful when you are talking to customers. You are a subject matter expert. And as I say, when we do our webinars, these are the kinds of things you need to know. These things, we're telling you these things because you need to know them, not because there's an expectation that you're going to come buy something from us.
Yeah, definitely. For me, the way I've always thought about it is it's about adding value above and beyond what you do for the day job. Like, I always think if you're a recruitment agency or as a cybersecurity consultancy company, if you can, and that's exactly what you've just described, is when people talk to you, if they're coming away from every single meeting going, Teddy, every time I speak to Mike, he tells me something that I didn't know, or he helps me in this way. It helps other people, for starters, and it helps in a business sense, definitely. I've seen your podcast on my feed sometimes. I see you present it with one of your colleagues sometimes. You always start off and there's a bit of dry sense of humor at the start. Tell us a bit about the pod and what goes down on the show, mate.
Yeah, what we try to do is pick out 3 or 4 news articles of the week and go over those, right? So they've been coming out every day in the news blast. And then there are some of them that really require, maybe we should talk about these a little more.
Yeah.
And so that can be regulatory pressures that certain sectors are seeing. That can be initiatives by the federal government. That can be campaigns going on that have compromised lots and lots of home commodity equipment to use as a big proxy network for the Chinese. And here's why the FBI is taking it down. Things like this. Not so much FUD, but things that we try to make actionable in terms of, you need to watch out for this happening. I always say, if you want somebody to remember what you say, make it 50% stand-up comedy. We try to have a little bit of fun with it. And there's a lot of irony in this business and a lot of funny things that happen. And if you point them out, you can keep it kind of light, even though you're discussing things that are pretty heavy.
Yeah, and like you say, you've got to keep it fun. It's what we spend most of our time doing. So it goes back to what you were saying about the book. I'm just trying to remember the three P's.
The Neil Doshi play, purpose, potential, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The play bit has got to come in. But yeah, good. And you do shorts for it as well, don't you? You do like clips for it on the LinkedIn. I've seen them on the feed.
We've experimented with a little bit of that stuff.
Okay, I have
some good marketing people. So I always say I need handlers. I need supervision. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of these things, I'm just doing what I'm told.
We do it. We do them as well. We do clips for the pod. But what happens is we get so busy on the recruitment that I end up taking people off the pod and putting them on the different aspects of recruitment. So if we get mega busy, it gets pushed to one side. But when we're okay, it gets some attention. But cool. But we'll definitely, as we come to the end here, we'll put you a link to your pod, any webinars, the blog and the white papers that you're doing with the blast of news information, like you mentioned. We'll get all that in the show notes. We'll get that book that you mentioned as well. We'll get that in. And yeah, I'm glad we've done this and it's been good. Do you think we've done okay?
All I can say is I've had a great time chatting with you, Thomas. This has been really fun. Again, we got to have fun doing these things, because if you let it, this business will fry your brain and you just can't let it. You got to step back, poke fun at yourself, poke fun at what's going on in the world, and then get back to the serious work.
Definitely. And Mike, just keep doing what you're doing. Wicked what you do. Like you say, you mentioned the word mission a lot, and I can see why, because it's really cool what you've got going on. And nice to see you, mate. We'll definitely have to leave it less than a year before we next catch up. I'll tell the team that you're not that horrible guy that they thought you were. I know you're all right.
I apologize. Oh, wait a minute. Now I know what you're talking about.
She actually said something to me. She was, are you sure you've spent? I said, I promise you I have. But yeah, anyway, we're sorted, mate. But nice to see you. Thanks again. I know you're super busy. So thanks for your time, and I'll see you soon.
All right. I look forward to the next chat.